Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, if you do want to tune in to the election returns coverage tonight, I'll be anchoring NPR's first hour of national coverage as the polls close in New Jersey at 8 o'clock tonight. And then other NPR hosts will take you through the night. But me and you in America at 8 o'clock tonight, if you want to tune in for the coverage here on WNYC. We'll be taking calls like we do here on the morning show from our area. We'll be taking calls from all over the country on how people are feeling on this last big primary night, except for D.C. a week from today. So the social psychology of our voters is fascinating. My next guest, you know, as a storyteller who has written a lot about social psychology and might have some thoughts on voter decision making. However, his newest interest is in history, and I'm pretty sure he thinks that history can tell us something about the current election, as well as our current state of affairs in many ways. So we have staff writer at The New Yorker, author of books including Outliers, Blank, The Tipping Point, host of the new podcast, Revisionist History Now, Malcolm Gladwell. Hey, Malcolm, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thank you, Brian. Happy to be here.
Your new podcast, as I just said, is called Revisionist History, and the tagline you give it is, "Sometimes the past deserves a second chance." So being this kind of social psychology popularizer, which is, I think, how people know you, why did you decide to do a podcast about history?
Well, because I don't think there's a sharp distinction between my old interests of my sort of long-term interests of psychology and sociology and history. I mean, I think you have to bring all the lessons of the former to bear on the latter. So in the stories I tell in this podcast, you know, I'll tell the story of a person or an event or some past thing. And then in an attempt to understand it, oftentimes I'll bring in ideas from psychology or so the opening episode is all about what it means to be. It's all about a painting from the 19th century, and it asks the question, what does it mean to be the first outsider to enter a closed world? And you know, how do you explain that? Well, you explain it by telling the story of what happened, but also you have to start to look at other disciplines, psychology and such, for clues,
right? And let's talk more about that first episode of Revisionist History. You didn't go to somebody like George Washington or Alexander What's-His-Name or some other icon that typically people might visit for revisionist histories. You did it with a discussion of Elizabeth Thompson and her painting Roll Call.
Yeah.
So paint us a picture. Who was she, and why is Roll Call and why is Elizabeth Thompson worth revisiting as your first revisionist history podcast?
So she's a painter in England in the late 19th century, and she paints this painting, Roll Call, which is briefly in the 1870s in England the most famous painting in England. It is, I mean, it's like there's almost no contemporary equivalent, because this is a time when painting was culturally absolutely central. And it creates a sensation. It's this painting from the Crimean War. And everyone thinks that she's going to be the first woman to kind of break the all-male patriarchy of the world of painting, because there are no women, female painters to speak of in the 19th century. And painting has a whole elaborate kind of institutional structure which governs the profession, which is all male. And everyone thinks that she's going to be the first person to kind of join that leadership group. And there's this great excitement as the first outsider sort of steps into this all-male world. And everyone waits and waits for the revolution to happen, and it never happens. And I think that is, you know, so often we tell stories about outsiders that are stories about pioneers. The outsider enters the previously closed world, and all of a sudden the doors are flung wide open. That's the story of the civil rights movement. It's the story of Jackie Robinson in baseball. But I think there is an even more common occurrence, which is the closed world lets in one outsider and then uses that act of generosity to shut the door for everybody else.
We've done our
part, right?
Interesting choice of narrative. First woman to break through in a male-dominated field. Is that a coincidence?
It is absolutely not a coincidence. I mean, the whole episode is intended as a kind of allegory about what's going on, what went on in 08 with Barack Obama, and what could potentially go on in this year with Hillary Clinton. Because when you look at what happened to Elizabeth Thompson, the minute she achieved this kind of fame and status, what happened to her? What happened to her is that she became a kind of target for abuse. The same world that let her in then turned on her, and they slammed the door in her face, and they wouldn't show the other paintings she did after roll call, and they basically brushed her under the carpet. And, you know, if you look around the world at countries that have elected a female head of state, and you look at how many times they then elect a second female head of state, it's almost never, right? People, they do it once, and then they say, we have shown our openness, we're finished. That is a really crucial lesson, I think, to draw from this story.
And another parallel that you see is with former Australian Prime Minister Julia, do you say Gillard? I don't know
her. Gillard, yes.
Julia Gillard. So here's a 30-second clip from the podcast of her speaking.
The Leader of the Opposition says that people who hold sexist views and who are misogynists are not appropriate for high office. Well, I hope the Leader of the Opposition has got a piece of paper and he is writing out his resignation. Because if he wants to know what misogyny looks like in modern Australia, he doesn't need a motion in the House of Representatives. He needs a mirror. That's what he needs.
First of all, how fantastic is her accent?
And people in the background, like British Question Time, we don't have that kind of lack of decorum in Congress.
Well, it's not as a Canadian.
A mirror. Hold up a mirror is the guy in the background.
As a Canadian and someone who grew up in the parliamentary system, I would not call that lack of decorum. I would call that a healthy exchange of views. No, but her story is amazing. It's exactly what I'm talking about. She's the first female prime minister in Australian history. And everyone thinks, wow, this is... signals a revolutionary change in Australian politics. The minute she gets elected, she becomes subjected to the most extraordinary torrent of abuse, openly, outrageously sexist abuse. And and that's what, at one point during the podcast, we sort of walk through what happened to her. It is chilling. And it makes you, you know, if Hillary Clinton wins, it makes you wonder what's going to happen. Is she going to unleash this kind of horrific torrent of abuse? Because people, once they see that they've taken a kind of open liberal act and let in the outsider, then they feel free. That's what the whole point is of the piece is about. They feel free to unleash their sort of inner hostilities.
And so another clip from the podcast. This is just a 12-second clip of a Fox News anchor. So we'll listen to this and this is not from the podcast? Oh, sorry. I'm a little confused about this clip. So we'll get to that in a minute. Uh-huh. Do you think a similar thing happened to Barack Obama race?
I think so. I think absolutely. In fact, I talk in the piece. It's just, the idea that's at the core of the piece is a notion from psychology called moral licensing. And moral licensing says that if someone does one good thing, then they feel free to do a bad thing to kind of compensate. And so the good thing is we open the door to an African-American president. And then so having done that, we then feel free to say things that we would never otherwise have said. And Barack Obama, I think, bears the brunt of that. I mean, I think he was subjected to a level of behavior that is we never saw before on the part of critics of a sitting president.
Malcolm Gladwell with us on WNYC. His new podcast is called Revisionist History, and we're talking a little bit about episode one, the story of painter Elizabeth Thompson, and comparing it with Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard. And then how far do you go with that? Do you take that further into political examples?
I do. I mean, I don't want to give the whole thing away, Brian. I want people to listen to the episode. But it's typical. You know, I've got – so there's 10 episodes in the season of this show. And in each of those episodes, I start with something from, like I said, a historical episode, example, idea. One of the shows is about a song. And I use it as a way to examine broader questions. So I mentioned this.
Right. And you brought in the way you were just framing the Thompson story, really you brought in social science.
And
social psychology, your traditional concern.
So, yes. And so I mentioned one episode is about a song written by Elvis Costello, and it came out on an album he releases in 1984. And it's an obscure song. I guarantee no one's ever heard of it. But the whole reason that I want to go through this, I tell the story of this song and what happened to it, is a way of trying to figure out how creativity works and how an awful lot of what we consider to be works of genius had an incredibly circuitous path to greatness. There's an example where you start with something incredibly trivial, 3 minutes of a terrible song, by the way. It's not a good song. And even Elvis Costello will say it's a terrible song.
Huh.
And then we get to this. I end up at the Met looking at Cezanne's with the Cezanne expert. I mean, that's the way these episodes work.
Sounds like fun. Rachel and Rhinebeck wants to ask you a question. Rachel, you're on WNYC with Malcolm Gladwell. Hi.
Hi, Malcolm.
Hello.
I wanted to ask you about the political analogy with female leaders.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking about Margaret Thatcher a lot lately because, to my shame, I used my first vote ever to vote for her,
mm-hmm.
and then moved here, and she survived for many, many years. But my theory is that she survived so long because she almost pretended to be a man, so the politicians around her could not display misogyny, but in a way she was displaying it by not doing anything at all for other women.
Yes. Well, it's a really interesting question, and it touches on the general theory or area that I'm exploring in this podcast is the notion of the token. So the pioneer is the first person in who opens the doors to others. The token is the first person in, and there never is another, right? The door closes after them. And tokens are under an extraordinary amount of pressure. They're under extraordinary scrutiny, and they're not allowed to behave as themselves. And so Margaret Thatcher is a kind of classic, to your point, a classic example of a token. She almost has to take on another identity in order to survive as long as she does. And the identity is she has to be more male than the men. And I am deeply curious and also a little bit apprehensive to see how this phenomenon plays out if Hillary Clinton...
I mean, they're two very, very different people. I think Margaret Thatcher was always that way.
Yes.
I mean, Hillary Clinton seems to me authentically herself, and that's partly why a lot of people on the right, you know, just can't stand it, that she's going to do what she thinks is right.
It's not what everybody says about Hillary Clinton, but Rachel, go ahead.
Yes.
But as a human being and a woman, she's going to do that.
No, it is an incredibly there's a woman at Harvard Business School named Rosabeth Cantor, who wrote a brilliant book on tokens many years ago, which is worth reading, because she really focuses in on if you are a woman in a predominantly male environment, what you have to go through, particularly, like I said, if you're the first, right? If you're trying to kind of break down barriers, and it is far more difficult than it appears to be from the outside. Parenthetically, in another of the revisionist history episodes, there's one about political satire, and I talk about a satirist who tried to make fun of Thatcher back in England in the 80s. And in the course of doing that show, I listened to all these Thatcher speeches, and man, she was a piece of work. That's all I will say. You probably remember that well. But.
All right, Rachel, thank you for your call. Just a few minutes left with Malcolm Gladwell, his new podcast, Revisionist History. And by the way, if you want to see him in person, he's got an event tonight at the 92nd Street Y, where he'll be in conversation about some of this with Jacob Weisberg from Slate. How do you like doing audio after all these years in print?
I know. Well, it is so profoundly different from writing. You start out and you think, oh, I'm just going to write out my thoughts and read them, and that's, you know, and then you realize, oh no, it's the rules are totally different. And what I loved about the experience was how you can do with audio, with radio, you can touch on emotional things in a way that's almost impossible to do in print. And so there are several episodes of Revisionist History where I, as I was recording them, I was close to tears. That never happens when you're writing a book.
Zoe in the Bronx, you're on WNYC with Malcolm Gladwell. Hi.
Yes, when you say it bothers me a bit because the same people who open the door are not to the person are not the ones that keep the abuse on later. They, right? It's other people who crawl out who feel free, whether in Congress or whatever.
Although I think you're saying it's a little more complicated than
I think you're right to make that distinction, but I think it's both. So there is the phenomenon that suddenly critics feel emboldened, people who never opened the door in the first place. But it's also, this is what's fascinating about the psychological research on this issue. What it shows is that the door openers themselves also feel emboldened to say things they would never otherwise, and do things they would never otherwise do. So this is why I think this subject is so worthy of discussion now, particularly with Hillary, the prospect of Hillary looming on the horizon.
Revisionist History. So should I say a history podcast through the lens of social psychology?
You can say whatever you want, Brian.
What would you say?
I would say listen. Yes, that's a lovely way of describing it.
And it comes out June 16th. People can sign up now, and then the
first episode
drop will be June 16th.
And then one episode a week for 10 weeks.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes.
Malcolm Gladwell, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
And again, tonight at the 92nd Street Y, if you want to see him in conversation with political journalist and head of the Slate Group, Jacob Weisberg.